Studios.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
We have Leslie Kane, author of a new UFO book, featuring a number of experts contributing to the piece. Chris O'Brien is our co-host. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in the Paracast. Chris, why don't you pick up on the questioning?
One of the things that I've noticed in here is, and I find this actually quite intriguing, is the very excellent eyewitness accounts and how each of these cases that you have pulled out and concentrated on are some of the best cases, I think, that we have on record. What case did you find the most intriguing in terms of the demonstrated abilities of the craft to maneuver, some of the high strange elements that I think were found in some of these cases? Which one struck you the most as being the most incredible?
I'd say in terms of that, probably the cases of Parviz Jafari and Oscar Santa Maria, the two pilots who actually attempted to shoot down the UFOs, because they had these extended kind of interactive dogfights with the objects, you know, for a long period of time. So they were kind of engaged. It was almost like, almost at a level of communication in a certain way. I mean, that's too much, but they were engaged in interacting with the objects for quite a while. And so we got to see a lot of the behaviors of the objects in those two cases. And also what's really fascinating is the fact that in both cases, the UFO seemed to know when the pilot was about to shoot, and they were able to maneuver in two differently in the two cases, but they were able to, you know, save themselves, if you want to put it that way, from being harmed or from being shot at, assuming that they, it definitely showed some kind of intelligence, let's put it that way, because it happened consecutively two or three, four times in each case that, you know, the UFO disabled the equipment in one case or moved just at the last moment very rapidly in another case. And that's so fascinating to me that these maneuvers happen exactly at the instant that the pilot was about to fire, as if there was some knowledge on the part of the object about what...
Did the pilots think that this was some sort of technological ability, or did they get a sense that there was something else going on? Did this only happen, in other words, when they were actually locked on with targeting systems, or was there some sort of anticipation on the part of the phenomenon based on possibly the pilots thinking that he was going to do something and then the object seemed to respond? Was it a mechanical, technological response, do you think, or did they think, or was it something else?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really hard to say. In both cases, they were actually engaged with their gear, you know. And in Jafari's case, he had a heat-seeking missile that he had programmed, and he was just about to press the button, and then he lost all control of his equipment. And in the Peruvian case with Oscar Santa Maria, he was about to fire these large shells at the object. And in every case, I think the object was hovering. It was still, and he was just aimed at it. And at the very last minute, the thing just shot up. So I think it's hard to know whether the phenomenon was responding to some kind of technological, you know, a signal that it was getting from the pilot, or whether how it actually clued into what was going on. I don't think they know, really.
Well, of course, in Star Trek, Leslie, in Star Trek, they know when the weapons are going to be fired, so maybe E.T. knows, too.
Well, who am I to say? What am I to say about that? I mean, in Oscar Santa Maria's case, he actually did fire successfully on the object earlier on during this interaction that he had.
Right, and there was no effect.
Hit it. In fact, he believes that he is the only man in the world, he's the only man that we know of, there may be others, that have actually shot and hit a UFO. And he describes that in his chapter in the book. It's just an amazing thing to read. And the UFO was not affected, but he could see the shells. They were actually kind of absorbed by the object, absorbed by the energy or the light that was around it. And it seemed to have actually no effect. And these are huge, 35 millimeter shells that would normally destroy anything that it hit. So that was that's a pretty unusual story.
Yeah, that's pretty rare.
Actually hit the thing. Yeah, and then they start having these chasing each other around, and he tries to shoot it many other times, and he's not successful.
There's a book that was out there. There was a book out. In fact, we had the author of it here on the PowerCast called Shoot 'Em Down, which covered instances, I guess, back to the 1950s, where the U.S. military was firing at UFOs when they were seen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely want to read that book. I've got some documentation from NORAD in the book about attempts to chase them and shoot at them. But, you know, these two cases in particular are so important because we have so much detail about them, and we've got the pilots actually telling their own stories from their perspective. It really reads like science fiction when you read it, even though it isn't.
You kind of think of the movie Independence Day, where they kept trying to fire on E.T., and they just bounce off because of their shields, which is almost back to Star Trek.
Right. Yeah. I don't know what to say on that.
Well, as long as the UFOs don't fire back on us, you know, that's not a good way to welcome E.T. to our planet.
Oh, and that's an important point, too. I mean, a number of the officials in this book make the point that, and we point out the fact that that has never happened to our knowledge. And even though we have chased them and fired at them and acted aggressively and towards the objects, they have not retaliated. And there's also a general consensus among the generals that I spoke to who have been investigating this stuff that UFOs, that there's no hostility there, that they're not hostile and they have never demonstrated any hostility, even though we have. But that can be dangerous. And that's one of the national security questions that people have. If there's a national security danger, it has to do with our own pilots and our own Air Force, you know, taking aggressive action when it's not appropriate to do so. And that could get us in trouble.
Have you seen the evidence in the research you've done and the material that these people have presented to you that there is some official approach of what to do with regard to UFOs near military craft? Just leave them alone or what?
Well, I think one of the problems is that there is no policy, at least in the United States. There's nothing that trains or prepares the pilots. It's as if they don't exist. And that's another point that Richard Haynes makes in his chapter in the book, too, is that not only for Air Force pilots, but for commercial pilots. There is nothing that prepares them for the possibility of encountering one of these things. And they are encountered, you know, as frequently as wind shear or bird strikes are, and they're prepared for those things. So it's a problem. They're not supposed to see them. They're not supposed to exist, and therefore they're not going to be taught what to do. And that's dangerous. That is a dangerous situation.
Now, did your studies at all, or the information you got from all these people, indicate any possible evidence that our American military or civilian government have actually tried to contact whatever is behind the UFOs?
I never ran across anything suggesting that. Doesn't mean it's not there, but I haven't run across anything about our government trying to contact them. I know there was something in Canada, right, with Wilbert Smith years ago, as I recall. You know Wilbert Smith, who worked for the Canadian government maybe in the 50s or 60s?
Right, and he was a friend of Major Donald Kehoe. He was mentioned in Major Donald Kehoe a lot as being very much a hero, someone trying to get the information to the public. But the other...
Right, and I think he was trying to do some contact thing, but I really haven't heard of anything involving the U.S. government doing that.
According to Ray Stanford, they were attempting to in 77 down at White Sands. He got some incredible...
It's possible that, you know... I certainly, it's a lot of stuff I don't know, so that may be something I just don't know about.
It wouldn't necessarily be something, Leslie, that any of us would be privy to that information. Certainly would be way, way above our rank and above our pay grade. And this is something we'll have to get into as we continue with this discussion. The book on the table, which is just hitting the streets about the time most of you will be hearing this episode, is UFOs, Generals, Pilots, and Government Officials Go on the Record. The author is Leslie Kane. The introduction, the foreword written by John Podesta. I'm Gene Steinberg. Co-host is Chris O'Brien. You're in
the Paracast.
You are about to enter another dimension. A dimension not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a sinister land of secret rites, passwords, initiations, and handshakes, where the truth remains hidden and history is controlled by an elite group of mysterious men. Imagine, if you will, that I'm holding a book in my hands that explains this secret history, and that the name of this book is Conspiracies and Secret Societies, The Complete Dossier. Here is described centuries of dark dealing, lies, murder, mayhem, and cover-ups in the pursuit of unimaginable money and power. My name is Brad Steiger, and the stories you are about to read may have actually happened at the signpost up ahead. Your next stop, Conspiracies and Secret Societies, The Complete Dossier.
As many people know, ever since President Nixon took us up the gold standard, the U.S. dollar has been devaluating. What people don't know, however, is how this directly affects your personal finances. Is there a way to prevent your portfolios from losing value? The answer to all of this is gold and silver. They have both maintained their purchasing power for 6,000 years. If you had had $100,000 in cash and $100,000 in gold and silver back in 1913 and kept them both until now, your cash would actually have the buying power of only $4,800, but your gold and silver would have the buying power of $3 million. The answer to protecting your assets is simple. Call me, John Ballman, today at 1-800-686-2237, extension 169. Get all your questions answered before your money is worth zero. Call 1-800-686-2237, extension 169. Take action today while we still accept paper dollars for gold. That's 1-800-686-2237, extension 169.
Where have all the military surplus stores gone? Don't worry, you don't need one, because everything you need at Military Surplus is at MainMilitary.com. That's M-A-I-N-E, Military.com, one of the last surviving true military surplus stores in the country. Go online now to MainMilitary.com and discover a source for hard-to-find surplus items at true surplus prices. Surplus gun cleaning kits as low as $2.99, complete chemical suits as low as $11.99. See our huge selection of gas masks, filters, and accessories. Finish and M10 gas masks are $3 for $30, and Swiss filters are $3 for $12. Searching for Strike Anywhere matches? MainMilitary.com has them, plus a whole new product line of survival and first aid kits and lots more. Get free shipping on orders over $50 only at MainMilitary.com. That's M-A-I-N-E, Military.com. Or call 877-608-0179, 877-608-0179. MainMilitary.com, the main name in military supply.
When you hear the words water purification, what comes to mind? If it's Berkey Water Purification Systems, this message is for you. Did you know that over 60% of municipal water contains fluoride at less than 2 cents per gallon? Berkey water filters purify treated and untreated water, remove dangerous chlorine, fluoride, and contaminants from municipal water. These filters are powerful enough to purify stagnant pond water, making them perfect for rainwater collection systems. From the smallest to the largest systems, BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com has what you need. With your system purchase, you'll receive a shower filter, a fluoride filter, or two sport Berkey bottles absolutely free. BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com would like to offer GCN listeners 5% off all ceramic filter systems and ship all orders over $50 free of charge. Visit BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. That's BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. Or call 1-877-99-BERKEY. That's 1-877-99-BERKEY today.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio.
You guys are awesome.
I love this station. I really do.
GCN.
We want to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com. Get in on all the action at forum.theparacast.com.
Leslie Kane, author of a new book on UFOs from Harmony Books, and it's on the stands right now. So you know, you can order it from our Paracast website through Amazon, and we make a couple of cents on each book transaction. That's how it goes. Chris O'Brien is the co-host. You're in the Paracast, and I was asking Leslie about evidence, if there is any, of possible government interactions with ET. And of course, then we go back to some of these weird disclosure type books, such as The Day After Roswell. And I might as well ask you about, do you think there's any evidence that we have taken ET technology and sent it off to private industry so we can't find it from Freedom of Information requests?
Well, I mean, there hasn't been any evidence that I can rely on or I can use as a journalist. I mean, there's a lot of speculation about it, and there's people that say so-and-so, some unnamed source told me this or that. But as a journalist, that kind of information is not useful. It can't be verified. It can't be corroborated. It may or may not be true, but I can only go with information that can be verified, and that's not something that I've ever seen solid backing for. So it kind of leaves it open for a lot of people like to speculate and talk about it, but I don't think it's solidly backed up at all.
Do you get into such controversy?
Maybe it's true.
Sure.
I mean, I'm not saying it might not be true. I just don't know. And I don't have the kind of information that allows me to determine it one way or the other.
Did you ever find yourself checking more into the Roswell affair as part of this book's
not
research?
Not really, Gene. I mean, you know, and I hope people aren't going to be unhappy that there's not more in the book on the Roswell affair. I think one reason was the case is, you know, it was so long ago that it happened. Number two, there's already been so much research done and so much written about it. And number three, my book was really focused on official people, you know, government officials, pilots and generals and people like that, which we don't have in connection with the Roswell case. I mean, as far as I know, we don't have high-level government officials that are alive now. And it just sort of has this funny role in the culture, the whole Roswell case, of being sort of, you know, too much of a sort of a cultural phenomenon. And I just didn't really think that it would be helpful for this kind of a book to deal with that case.
I applaud your decision.
And and there's lots of other cases, you know, that I couldn't. But it just wasn't, it really wouldn't have made sense or worked for this book. So I didn't. I mentioned it a little bit in conjunction with Congressman Schiff's effort to get information about the Roswell case, and I do talk about that in the book. And the fact that, you know, the GAO said that the documents had been destroyed. It's sort of presented in a bigger context of the bigger issues around government secrecy.
Okay,
so,
well, you know what? Let's mention that, because this is something that I realize you want people to read the book, but this is something that we really should get into. Documents being destroyed. You said the Roswell documents were destroyed. Anything else? What other documents ended up being destroyed?
Good question. I'd have to think about that. Well, of course, we never found the estimate of the situation, the very important Project Sign document that was sent up the chain of command stating that a certain number of staffers believed that this was an interplanetary phenomenon and sent up to government General Vanderbilt, who then returned it to the Project Sign and said, we don't have enough proof of this. And, you know, this was way back in, I don't know, 1950 or something. That document has never surfaced. I don't know if that means it was destroyed, but I think maybe Ruppelt said in his book it was destroyed or something. So I don't know about a lot of specific. I mean, if they're destroyed, it means we don't have them. So how do we know they're destroyed? But we do know that's about the GAO coming out with an investigation about the Roswell documents. I'm sure there are others that are missing or destroyed.
You know, Roswell, case closed.
Exactly. I mean,
the final answer. I've got an interesting question for you, Leslie. There's some very intriguing information about the overflight of these objects in the United States and elsewhere over sensitive military sites. One would think that this would have national security implications if these objects are able to fly with impunity over, let's say, nuclear missile sites, as we have in the 70s in Montana. Also, you mentioned the Rendlesham case from England. What did you find out in your research about how the official response was by government officials to these overflights, and in some cases the actual manipulation of some of the technology, the Earth technology, whether it be missiles or other things? How did you find any trending in terms of how the government would respond to multiple witness cases of this sort?
Well, I mean, my sense of these cases is that the ones that I am familiar with anyway is that they, you know, the ones that happened, I assume you're talking about post-project, maybe not before Project Blue Book closed and after, but is that they were handled very much within the context of the military base, that people were debriefed and told to keep quiet about it, basically. And they weren't reported. I mean, some of them were covered in the media to some extent, but my sense of it, and again, I'm not an expert on this particular type of case, but my sense is that they tried to keep it quiet as best they could. And there could have been a lot of reasons for that, maybe some of them legitimate reasons. But I know I've talked to Robert Salas quite a bit, who I've interviewed in the book, and, you know, he was debriefed but told not to talk about it, and I think that was fairly common. Same with Rendlesham. They were debriefed and told not to talk about it. So that seems to be the trend. And the interesting thing about those nuclear cases, also in terms of my book, is that Jean-Jacques Velasco, who headed up the French agency GEPAN for 20 years, has written at the end of his chapter about his own work, has written about his strong belief in the connection between UFO sightings or UFO overflights and the nuclear issue. And it's the first time he's really spoken out about that as much as he did here. So it is a really interesting aspect of this whole phenomenon and the whole question of why they might be here if indeed they're coming from somewhere else, which again, we don't really know. But
so possibly we're dealing with a reaction, but it's not being made public, or it's not, let's say, within the purview of FOIA. I would think that the government would have some real concerns about some of the cases that have, you know, finally come out over the years, especially a case like Rendlesham or the military involvement with the missile silo sightings in Montana and Michigan. To me, it would seem that that would be something that would be of quite a concern, and I'm surprised that we really don't have any documentation about official government responses to these events.
That's true. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And there's no question they would have had to have been concerned at the time, but I think it's also clear that they would not want this information to become public when it involves something as sensitive as a nuclear base being actually affected by these, let's say, the missiles shutting down or something like that. I mean, they're not going to file reports on that. They're going to be available to the public, I don't think. And at the time, they certainly wanted to keep it quiet.
We'll get into more of that in a moment.
That's not to say they weren't interested in it, yeah.
We have Leslie Kane, author of a new UFO book. Gene Steinberg, co-host is Chris O'Brien. You're in
the Paracast.
As you know, the Paracast is brought to you by Audible.com, the Internet's leading provider of audiobooks. With more than 75,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers, for listeners of the Paracast, Audible.com is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service. One book to consider, for example, is Above Top Secret, The Worldwide UFO Cover-Up by Timothy Good. Timothy Good, as you know, has been a guest on the Paracast. Yet another book worth considering from Audible.com is Lies and Deception, UFOs and the Secret Agenda, from Timothy Good once again, and also from our old friend Nick Pope. As you know, Nick Pope has also been on the Paracast. This is another book that you're definitely going to want to check out. For this book or another free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/paracast. That's audiblepodcast.com/paracast.
Thousands of Americans are facing evacuation. If you or any of your loved ones might need to evacuate, you must do it yourselves. Please don't procrastinate until they do it for you. Remember the terrible conditions of those that didn't get out for Katrina. Go right now to efoodsdirect.com/Alex or call 800-409-5633 for information on the new evacuation pack. It contains 2 weeks of delicious, easy-to-fix food, along with the equipment to prepare it. It's packed in a rugged, heavy-duty tote for transport. Evacuations are looming with the storms and the Gulf oil catastrophe. No matter where you live, wildfires, earthquakes, floods, and storms must be escaped. Don't be like a deer frozen in the headlights of oncoming disaster. At least prepare yourself with this two-week evacuation pack from eFoodsDirect.com. Call 800-409-5633. On the web, eFoodsDirect.com/Alex.
Hi, I'm Mark Craighead, founder of Crossbreed Holsters. I designed our top-selling holster, the Super Tuck Deluxe, to solve the problems of being poked, pinched, and gouged while carrying concealed. The Super Tuck Deluxe is the most comfortable, most concealable holster on the market today. We offer a two-week free trial and a lifetime warranty.
Visit us at crossbreedholsters.com. Don't forget, crossbreedholsters.com.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.
If you owe the IRS money you can't pay, then listen carefully, because you already know that the problem won't go away by itself. You can get help today from the leading tax expert in the country, Dan Pilla.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. The IRS isn't going to just forget about you. Right now, the IRS is hiring thousands of tax collectors to go after delinquent accounts just like yours. That's why you need to take action today, and I can help. I take a simple but proven approach to solving your tax debt problem. First, I stabilize collections so you don't have to worry about wage and bank levies. Next, I build a detailed plan to get your debt reduced to the fullest extent possible, sometimes even eliminated. Finally, I work with you every step of the way to get your problem solved once and for all. So call now for a free consultation. Call 1-800-346-6829.
Dan Pilla will solve your tax problem, guaranteed. He's helped thousands of people, and he can help you too. Call us today at 800-346-6829. That's 800-34-NO-TAX.
Tired of searching for great talk radio?
Search no more.
I'm told that it has everything.
We are the GCN Radio Network.
You're a little arrogant. You never know what's going to happen next.
Leslie Kane joins us talking about her new book. Before we go on, you have a special site set up for this book. Can you tell our listeners where to find it?
Yes. The site is UFOsOnTheRecord.com. It's sort of an abbreviated version of the title of the book, UFOsOnTheRecord.com, and it's got lots of background information. And it also has a blog where I'm going to be communicating with people and posting stuff as the book comes out and things that happen with the media and so on. Links to shows like this one. So I hope people will check it out. There's also, if they want to buy the book, they can do it on that site as well. But if you guys can get something from them buying it there, I encourage them to buy it there.
I don't want to tell people how embarrassingly low the commissions they give you from Amazon Books are. I mean, it's like a pennies per book.
Really?
It's really insane, but, you know, we'll take anything we can get, so we're happy to have it. Okay, so it's UFOsOnTheRecord.com.
Correct, yeah.
And we will
list... The main thing there is the blog. I just want people, you know, it's an interactive blog, and I think it'd be fun to have people check it out.
Yeah, I'll tell you what we'll do is when you click the name Leslie Kane on the Paracast.com website, you will magically go to that place. Isn't that amazing? Our co-host is Chris O'Brien. You were talking, of course, about UFOs and nukes, and, of course, researcher Robert Hastings did a book about that, where UFOs are seen over nuclear installations, and there have been stories about maybe they're trying to do some things there. Now, have you seen much evidence in your studies of UFOs actually not just showing up but trying to interfere or impact something?
Well, I mean, there are the cases we've been just talking about with the nuclear bases. I'm trying to think of other cases where they've interfered. Well, of course, the two pilots we were talking about, in which they shut down their equipment. I'm just trying to think off the top of my head of anything else.
Well, of course, we always had those sightings that we always heard about, and especially it's mentioned and kind of fantasized or dramatized in Close Encounters of the Third Kind, where if UFOs get near a car, and the car's electrical system goes kaput temporarily.
Right, right. And, of course, I've been more focused on airplanes, but it's the same thing, where airplanes are pulled off course, say, or the equipment inside of the cockpit goes completely nuts. You know, it starts spinning around the compasses, and or they lose their radio, their ability to communicate with the ground. There's lots of cases of that kind of thing happening where aircraft are affected by proximity to a UFO.
Yeah, the Tehran case from 76. The Tehran case from 1976, where the pilot was actually locked on to the object and his systems failed.
That's the one we were talking about earlier too. Yeah, so there are lots of cases where but there are also cases where the just being near a UFO affects an aircraft, and that's where the aviation safety issue comes in, which is of great concern to Dr. Richard Haynes and his group NARCAP, who have been working on that for a long time. And I think it's a very important component of this issue. It's also a good avenue for bringing attention to it, because a lot of people respond to the aviation safety aspect of it, and they feel less threatened by associating themselves with UFOs when there's a reason for it, such as aviation safety. So we have found over the years that government officials are quite responsive to that aspect to it.
I was going to ask you, being a frontline journalist, I couldn't help but notice that Miles O'Brien, who I believe is the aviation correspondent for CNN, had a very interesting quote there that you used in the publicity for the book. What is the feeling of your top flight frontline journalists about the UFO question? We're seeing, I think, in my opinion, a gradual fading away from the little green men and alien jokes at the end of local broadcasts. I do seem to feel that there is a tendency to trend towards taking the subject more seriously. What are you thinking on this? What have you felt is the journalistic trend that's going on here?
Yeah, I mean, I think I would agree with you, Chris. If I look back to when I actually started covering this topic, which was about 10 years ago, I think there is more coverage now and there's better coverage now. So I still think, of course, there's plenty of articles that come out with the little green men thing. They just cannot stay away from that, that little green men. And, you know, they have to make some kind of joke in it. But I agree with you. I think overall it's better. And there's so much coverage. And every time, as you mentioned earlier, there's the documents that come out of the MOD, or there's the sighting in China, or, you know, there was that sighting in Cleveland, Ohio, that eventually turned out to be an airplane coming. But, you know, the media gets very worked up about these cases. And I think overall they're doing a better job than they used to in terms of the way they cover it.
Well, I don't see when they bring up a sighting as much laughter as you used to get. It's not the summer wink and nod. Oh, it's the silly season. We have nothing to report on, so we'll talk about UFOs. Here's a sighting. Ha ha ho ho.
You're right. No, I think you're right. And I'm hoping that this book will put it up even another notch in the media in terms of how they respond to it. So I will see. I think we're moving in the right direction.
Now, in putting this book together, all the research you've done, did you find any areas of possible resistance in getting information out? People saying, you know what, I can't talk about this because my government contacts will be gone, they're interfering with me, something like that?
You mean people that actually contributed to the book, or
people
others?
That you tried to get to contribute?
Yeah, I mean, over the years, there have been certainly people I've spoken to who would not go on the record for various reasons, who would not, you know, for reasons like you're just suggesting, that they could get in trouble, or they have oaths, or they aren't supposed to talk about it, that kind of thing. And there's a lot of witnesses who won't go on the record because they're afraid of ridicule. So I have encountered that over the years. And as I say in the book, I mean, there are certain types of information I have received that I just have to kind of call it deep background. It's fascinating and it's meaningful to me, but unless something can be really checked out and the person is willing to have their name attached to it and so on, it really can only go so far in terms of being useful information that can be put forward. So it's more, those kinds of things are more background information for me, where certain people have restrictions. On the other hand, though, there's a lot of witnesses. For instance, the O'Hare case, I mean, there is literally not one witness that was willing to put their name out on that case, which I think is really a strong statement as to the problem that we have right now.
Yeah,
I mean, that
was
only
in
2006. Isn't that amazing?
And yeah,
it was
it really
so well
is.
Documented. Well documented. It was in the media. you know, and there's a lot, and then the NARCAP people did this great study of it, and not one name has come out. And they were all because they were afraid about their job security. Wow. So that's a statement as to where we're at and why we so much need to change the situation.
Did you at all cover Stevensville, Texas?
You know, I didn't because, again, it happened while I was already writing the book, and I just didn't have the time and energy to look into it. But I also was so focused on having government officials be the people that I'm dealing with, these high-level people that are in the book, that there was nobody in that case that was in that situation that could talk about it. It was just one of the ones that I really didn't have the time and energy to take on.
Now, in putting this book together, talking to the various contributors, any of the information they present in the book come as a total surprise out of left field to you?
That's a very interesting question. Very interesting question. I mean, I don't think in terms of the content of what they said. I think sometimes the emotion that they expressed was something I'd never heard before, you know. But in terms of the actual facts of the cases, I mean, I certainly learned a tremendously much more detail about these cases than I might have been familiar with before. But
so nothing really bowled you over?
Well, I mean, a lot of the cases bowled me over, yes. But they did. I mean, a lot of the cases bowled me over. Just reading about, this one case that I don't think a lot of people know about is the one of Captain Guerra from Portugal.
You know what? Let's talk about that Portuguese case coming up in our next segment, because it'd be nice. I think people would like to hear about it and maybe know some of the more interesting details about it. Leslie Kane, author of a new book about UFOs, available from Amazon Books. And if you go to UFOsOnTheRecord.com, you can check out her new website or click on the link from the Paracast. I'm Gene Steinberg. Chris O'Brien's the co-host, and you're in
the Paracast.
Ray Perkins, a reclusive veteran burned out from the Gulf War, lives tortured by relentless, perplexing nightmares. Nightmares of a horrific battle in deep space and of a mysterious woman suffering in agony for her devastated world. A woman not yet born, calling across centuries to him. Then, a coincidence leads him to his destiny, his chance to alter the universe. Attack! Of the Rockaways. The former fiction editor for Star Wars and Indiana Jones, Robert Simpson, writes, "The soul of the novel Attack of the Rockaways lies in its heart and passion for building a convincing tale of a love that spans a galaxy. A thrilling story. Attack of the Rockaways is available now. Read a sample chapter and get a special discount off of the cover price at our website, rockoids.com. That's rockoids.com. Attack of the Rockaways, a novel in the grand science fiction tradition."
Question: what would you rather drink? Acidic water, which burns holes in your body and causes loss of bone mass, or alkaline water, which promotes high energy and vibrant health? The answer is clear. And if you're drinking acidic water, you're helping cancer cells and bacteria to grow out of control. AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops combine a unique formula of the most alkaline minerals. Using Plasma pH Drops is the best way to alkalize your water and help you get rid of acid and regain your health and energy. Simply put 10 drops in the water you drink to raise the pH to a healthy alkaline level. Most experts agree that the water you drink should be at a pH level of 8 or higher. Disease organisms like bacteria, viruses, or cancer cannot survive in an alkaline high pH environment. Order your bottle of AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops now by going directly to AlkaVision.com. That's AlkaVision.com. Or by calling 269-409-1776. Again, 269-409-1776.
Hi, I'm Mark Craighead, founder of Crossbreed Holsters. I designed our top-selling holster, the Super Tuck Deluxe, to solve the problems of being poked, pinched, and gouged while carrying concealed. The Super Tuck Deluxe is the most comfortable, most concealable holster on the market today. We offer a 2-week free trial and a lifetime warranty.
Visit us at crossbreedholsters.com. Don't forget, crossbreedholsters.com.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.
All types of batteries for all types of gadgets.
We'll say it again.
All types of batteries for all types of gadgets.
Electronics, toys, flashlights, computers, accessories, and more are at BatteryStation.com.
Whatever type battery you need, alkaline, lithium, gel cell, NiCad, metal hydride, sealed lead acid, and more are at BatteryStation.com. Our homepage gives you quick access to ham, marine, police, fire, and aviation batteries. Plus, choose from our great selection of LED flashlights with no bulb to ever burn out and much longer battery life. Find many top brands, including Streamlight, Pelican, Surefire, Novatek, Gerber, and more at BatteryStation.com. You'll also find the most popular brands of ammunition and watertight cases for storing guns, food, electronics, survival gear, and more at BatteryStation.com. Call 417-257-7799. That's 417-257-7799. You will be surprised when you visit BatteryStation.com.
On air, online,
and on demand.
They say we offer simple answers to complex problems.
We are the GCN Radio Network.
You're in the Paracast. You never know what's going to happen next.
Leslie Kane joining us, author of a book called UFOs. Generals, pilots, and government officials go on the record. Chris O'Brien's the co-host. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in the Paracast. Before we broke, Leslie, you were about to talk about a sighting in Portugal that sounded really fascinating to you. Tell us more.
Actually, yeah, I would have to say this one did bowl me over when you know that I think about it. Because this was an Air Force pilot, and he was in a flying solo. He was a flight instructor. This was in 1982. And there was a second plane involved that had two pilots in it. But this guy, he had this very close encounter with this elliptical-shaped object that was like flying in elliptical circles around his plane as he just sort of hovered. And he didn't hover, but, you know, he was staying in one place pretty much just cruising in small circles. And this object was like circling him. And what was really amazing to me was this guy didn't seem frightened by this. He was extremely curious about it. And he really wanted to find out more about the object. So he decided at one point that he was going to do an intercept with this object, which meant the object had a definite trajectory that it kept repeating. So he just lined his plane up along the trajectory of the object. And when it was coming back around its loop, the object would have either would have crashed into him if it had kept going on its trajectory. But the pilot, Guerra, his name's, what's his first name here? His name is Julio Guerra. He was brave enough to just take the chance. He assumed that the object would go off course to avoid hitting him. And it was just his way of making the object do something different so that they could maybe learn something about it. So he headed right in a head-on pathway against this object. I thought that was pretty shockingly amazing.
While he was playing chicken with a UFO.
Yeah, and just was willing to risk a head-on collision, basically, under the assumption that the object would go off course, and he wanted to see what it would do. And the other pilots were watching the whole thing. So I'm not going to give away the end of the story because I want people to read it. But it was really an amazing account.
But he's still here, so at least that
he's
tells
still
us
still here. Still here and still fascinating. He's actually a captain. He flies for the major airline in Portugal now, Portugalia Airline, or whatever it's called.
I'll make a note of that. If I'm traveling to Portugal, I want him to be the pilot. He survived the UFO.
Never seen another one, but he's not at all afraid of flying or anything. He was incredibly curious but not frightened. And most of the other pilots had some fear around their events, so I thought it was...
Yeah, I wonder what the word for cojones is in Portuguese.
I don't know.
Because he had them.
We need a linguist here.
Yeah, quite a fascinating account, and you have to admire the man's...
I'd just like to make the point here that, you know, the real purpose of this book was to try and reach, it's really written for people, I mean, it's written for everyone, but the focus of it is to try and reach people who don't really know anything about UFOs. I think a lot of these cases are somewhat familiar to people that who listen to your show because they're well versed in the subject. What's different is the fact that they're written actually in the first person by the actual people involved. But even beyond that, you know, the intention behind this whole book is to sort of break through a barrier and to reach the mainstream public who normally would never read a book about UFOs. But I'm hoping, that, you know, and I just want listeners to know that if a lot of this sounds familiar to them, that's the reason. It's really to try and hook the person who knows nothing.
I'm going to ask the left field question here, the devil's advocate question. Mm-hmm. The skeptic's going to say this. Okay, the people you had contribute sightings to the book, how did you vet those sightings? Did you do some independent investigation?
Well, as much as I could. I mean, I found corroboration. I talked to other witnesses. I looked at documents. You know, I did as, and every case is different in terms of the level at which I was able to do that. So you'd have to ask me about a specific case, but to the extent that I could verify what was in the accounts, I did. But I also, for instance, if a general was telling me something, I let his standing within the military, the fact that he was a general, really carry a lot of the weight as to what he was saying, and it was impossible for me to fact check every single thing that these people told me. You know, it would have involved going to the countries and spending a lot of time, which I wasn't in a position to do. So I'm comfortable with what's put forward there, and I'm comfortable with the amount of data there is to back up the accounts that the people give.
Now, were there any pieces of information that didn't pass muster where you had to basically reject a contribution because you found out maybe the sighting wasn't well documented?
Well, yeah, I mean, I without naming any specifics, there were within another country there were I was working with two different officials who seemed to contradict each other in terms of their reporting on a very specific case down there. So I worked with them for a long time, but I basically had to decide that this is, you know, that I couldn't work with the material because it was contradictory, and I wasn't in a position to go down there and. So this was one situation that I couldn't use their material.
Now, in the light of contributing to your book, did you find any of the people that you work with were contacted by their respective governments and told, you know what, do you really want to do this?
I was not told that happened to anybody. I mean, a lot of these people are retired as well, so they have more liberty to do what they want to do. I know that Captain Rodrigo Bravo Garrido from Chile. He's only 32 years old, and he's actively employed with the Aviation Army of Chile, and he has to get cleared before he can put stuff out like this. He had to get cleared by the bureaucracy there, or his superiors within the Aviation Army, to come to our press conference in November of 2007. So I think he's the only one who's really has that kind of control placed on him, because everyone else is pretty much retired and fairly independent. Captain Bowyer is still flying. Captain Ray Bowyer, who was the British pilot who had the sighting in 2007, he's not retired. But, you know, again, it's in other countries you don't have the kind of restrictions that are placed on people here. And I haven't heard any of them tell me that they've had any problems being told not to do this.
Now, overall, in your recovery of documents through Freedom of Information, what obstacles have you encountered?
Major obstacles, which I know a lot of people encounter, which is, you know, delays, lack of responsiveness, not coming up with things that you know they have. That happened to me with the Keksberg incident with NASA. I knew for a fact that they had certain documents because I already had them in my files, and yet they wrote back a letter saying they didn't have the documents. So that's why we were able to file a lawsuit. We actually had to file a lawsuit on the Keksberg case, the FOIA case, to get NASA to carry out its responsibilities. So it's really a problem for people.
Now, is the Obama administration any more forthcoming? I mean, they talked about greater levels of transparency, and that's been disputed by the opposition on the political spectrum. But do you find they're any more cooperative with the things you're doing?
Yeah, I mean, I see. I haven't filed any FOIA requests since in the last few years, so I really couldn't say. But I know that, of course, when Obama came into office, I know that Obama made a statement when he first came to office about, you know, being committed to openness in government. As to whether this any of this has trickled down into the actual offices that deliver documents to people who write FOIA requests, I don't know because I haven't filed any of my own in the last since Obama came to office. So I think we need major reforms in the whole system because it just doesn't work for people. But I can't comment on to the extent of whether that's actually how much that may have changed or not in the last few years.
Now, John Podesta, of course, has friends in high places. Has he made any effort to work with you to get stuff you can't get?
Well, no. I mean, he was only the only initiative I worked on was the Kexburg case. And there's information on that about that on my website for people who aren't familiar. And he was a supporter of that initiative. So he was not actually actively, you know, helping to get the documents. He was basically standing by and lending his support and was very interested in how it all turned out. So, no, the answer to that is he hasn't actually gone out and tried to get anything.
Have you asked him at all to talk to the government officials, the Obama administration or Hillary Clinton, and say, you know what, really, we've got to get some disclosure here. We've got to get some end game here to find out what's going on.
Right, and I agree, and this is one of the purposes of the book is to facilitate that, and what I'm hoping is that once the momentum is built up around it, that it can serve as a tool through which we can make progress in that arena. I mean, I don't particularly relate to the concept of disclosure. That's not the approach that we take.
I'll tell you what, we'll ask about that in a moment. I just want to remind you that you can interact with us this way. Go to forum.theparacast.com, forum.theparacast.com, and join up with our message boards where you can post your comments about shows and, as a matter of fact, almost anything in particular. We have Leslie Kane, author of a new book on UFOs. I'm Gene Steinberg. Our co-host is Chris O'Brien. You're in
The Paracast.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you own an Apple iPhone and love to listen to your favorite programs on GCN, I've got good news for you. I'm proud to announce that GCN has a brand new iPhone app available for our dedicated listeners at GCNlive.com. Listen to your favorite hard-hitting GCN programs live or on demand right on your iPhone. And the best part? The GCN iPhone app can be yours absolutely free. Download the iPhone app today by clicking on the banner at GCNlive.com. Again, that's GCNlive.com. Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.